Stand, please.
Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 09-5337, George Lardner versus United States Department of Justice Appellant. Mr. Coppell for Appellant, Ms. Z for Appellee.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm John Coppell from the Appellate Staff, Civil Division, U.S. Department of Justice, and I'm representing the Appellant Department of Justice on this appeal. With me at counsel table is Deputy Pardon Attorney Helen Bulwark, and I will attempt to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The District Court in this case erroneously held that that the government must disclose under the FOIA a list of names of some 9,200 unsuccessful applicants for clemency, notwithstanding exemptions 6 and 7C, the personal privacy exemptions of the FOIA. In the National Association of Retired Federal Employees versus Horner, this court stated that something, even a modest privacy interest, outweighs nothing every time. And it also stated in the Multi-Ag versus Department of Agriculture case that that anything more than a de minimis privacy interest is substantial for purposes of the FOIA. Here, under the Supreme Court's controlling decisions in Reporters Committee and Favish, and this court's decision applying those cases, it is clear that the privacy interest is more than de minimis and that the public interest in disclosure is negligible. Accordingly, the district court's decision should be reversed. Turning first to the privacy interest, the district court has ordered disclosure of the names of the unsuccessful applicants, which means that it has ordered disclosure of a number of the names and the fact that these people have been convicted of federal crimes and have been denied clemency by the president. Those latter two pieces of information are necessarily negative and stigmatizing pieces of information, and it's clear that there's more than a de minimis privacy interest in their non-disclosure.
Is everyone, by definition, in this category a felon in violation of federal law?
Yes, Your Honor.
What's the stigma associated with not being released early?
The stigma is that there are a number of aspects of it. First of all, it draws renewed attention to the underlying conviction, and secondly,
they do that by seeking clemency. They take it to bring it to the attention of the president.
Well, but they haven't disclosed it publicly, and they have filed clemency applications.
So bring it to the attention of the president, and the question is whether there's a public interest in knowing what the president does. Ordinarily, the answer to that question is obvious, unless he's doing something that is classified and protected for national security reasons. It's ordinarily a matter of public interest to know what the president is doing.
Your Honor, that certainly may well be true as a general rule, but here the public interest in the names themselves is negligible because the names do not shed any light on the activities and operations of the government or what the government is up to.
Do the names of those who are granted clemency, is there a public interest in knowing those?
There's arguably greater public interest in knowing those because those are the people whom the president has deemed to be a relative handful of people whom the president has deemed to be worthy of the exercise of clemency.
And indeed, sometimes that exercise gives rise to a great deal of press attention and speculation and controversy, as in the case of Mark Rich.
Well, that is certainly correct, Your Honor. And that
doesn't it follow that denying clemency can be also of interest and concern, depending upon the notoriety and infamous nature of the criminal and crime?
Well, it certainly can be, Your Honor, but in the vast majority of these cases, there's no particular notoriety involved. Most of these cases are run-of-the-mill federal convictions, and the people did not have notoriety. And to the extent that there is notoriety, of course, journalists or other people can file specific named requests, and OPA will disclose that information under its policy. It just will not release a blanket list of denials, which is what the plaintiff sought here.
And what is the significance of the distinction? I know you tried to draw a distinction based on Reporters Committee, as I recall in the brief, between releasing the names individually and releasing a list of the names.
Well, the distinction is that that this is the understanding that the clemency applicants are operating under when they file their applications.
That's circular, at least going forward, isn't it? We can change that expectation.
Well, that is true, Your Honor. If the court ordered disclosure here, that would upset that expectation. But it is clear from the Boulwark declarations that is the expectation that people have been operating, clemency applicants have been operating under historically.
What's the expectation?
The expectation is that the names will only be released in response to specific names requests, or in the instance where OPA determines that there is a substantial public interest in their disclosure.
What is the privacy concern?
The privacy concern under Reporters Committee.
I'm not asking on the law. I'm asking what's the factual. Who are they concerned about the information being disclosed to?
The public at large.
Well, I assume that they don't care about public who they don't know. There must be some part of the public. You're talking about their employers, their friends, their community. Is that it?
Well, yes, Your Honor, potentially, yes.
But they know that can be disclosed. In fact, your notice specifically says that in the course of investigating your application, neighbors, former and present employers, associates, and other individuals who may be able to provide relevant information concerning you may be interviewed. So the very people who you're concerned about with respect to privacy, the applicants have been advised, may well be interviewed by the FBI or OPM or someone else. They know that there's a risk that the people who they don't want this disclosed to will get the disclosure, and they're on notice about that.
Well, Your Honor, they do know that there's that risk, but there's a difference between that and having one's name sort of bruited about to the public at large with absolutely no understanding as to where, you know, who will learn about it. I mean, there's obviously a much greater injury to the privacy interest
you agree they're on notice that the people closest to them and the people who could do them the most injury, for example, their employer, they're on notice that those people will be told or may be told, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that's certainly true in the pardon context.
Uh-huh. If the individual is
only in the pardon, not in commutation?
Well, in the commutation context, it's not as clear that people will necessarily, for instance, former employers or others will be asked. I mean, the focus is much more on the crime and on the.
Former associates, victims of the crime, witnesses of the crime, other people be interviewed?
They certainly may be notified of the pendency of the application. But again, the crucial distinction is that the applicants have lost control of any control over disclosure here. When they file their applications under the existing system, they have every reason to believe that OPA will not be disclosing this en masse, but will only disclose it in response to these very limited, specifically targeted requests. And
a reporter calls up and says, "Has Jim Jones' application been denied?" And the pardon attorney says, "Yes." And the reporter prints that in the New York Times as well as in the local media. I mean, I'm not sure of the expectation of privacy, the distinction you're drawing, where as opposed to if Jim Jones' name appears in a list of 9,000, who's going to notice, in one sense?
Well, it has to do with the element of control, which the Supreme Court emphasized in the Reporters Committee.
That's the point. You don't have any control.
But
you don't know what the reporter is going to do with that information.
But that is true, Your Honor. But the clemency applicant does have control to the degree that he's been assured by OPA that the information will only be disclosed in response to specific requests. Now,
and as part of interviews in the background investigation.
Yes, Your Honor. But in terms of requests from the public. As opposed to interviews during the investigatory process, disclosure will only take place within those parameters.
Nothing prevents the interviewee from calling the newspaper and saying, John Jones has applied and they're talking to me about it.
I don't think that there's any sort of confidentiality requirement that's imposed on people in this context. But again, the Reporters Committee stresses that the essence of the privacy interest is the ability to control dissemination of information about one's person. And that is why the understanding that is created by OPA's regulations and guidelines and by the information that is specifically given to applicants before they apply is so important, because the applicants are operating with that expectation, and that is what has been upset by the district court here. And there is certainly more than a de minimis interest in non-disclosure under these circumstances.
For the ordinary person seeking clemency who's not notorious and whose crime was not notorious and so on, the release of that name is not going to lead to any publicity, is it?
For the ordinary person, once it's out in the public, anything can be done with it, and people, you know, the plaintiff or others, the plaintiff can put it on the web. The plaintiff can attempt to identify and contact people who are denied clemency, and that's why there is a meaningful privacy interest at stake here. And in contrast, there really is no significant public interest in the disclosure of the list of names. And the public interest that's been identified by the district court and plaintiff is purely speculative, and that's not good enough under Favish. There has to be a nexus between the information, the specific information that's being disclosed in the public interest, and there is none.
Is it?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
It's not purely speculative, is it? You have the Inspector General's report.
Right, but in the vast majority of cases, it is speculative, because even the plaintiff acknowledges that the names do not give unambiguous evidence of national origin, and also in the vast majority of cases the persons won't even be traceable. So there really is no public interest here. It is totally speculative.
That's all speculation, isn't it? I mean, these days you have a name, you can trace people.
It's certainly easier because of that. But the plaintiff himself has said that it's. Difficult, or it may be difficult to trace many of these people.
Well, am I correct in thinking the Bureau of Prisons keeps a list available on the website?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And it includes data such as race of the prisoner?
And not on the list, I believe. I believe that the list basically would just...
I mean on the BOP website.
I don't believe that the people can get information on the race on the BOP website. You can get information, at least after 1982, the locator will provide information as to anyone who's been incarcerated, and before 1982, a hand search can provide that same information.
All right, that's for people who are currently incarcerated, right? Or past as well?
Passed as well. Before 1982, it would be through a hand search. But again, it has to be the specific named individuals. And the Brady-Lunny case upheld BOP's parallel policy of not revealing lists of names of people who are incarcerated. So there's consistency between OPA's practice and BOP's practice. So if there are no further questions, I would
I do have a question about whether 7 applies.
Yes, Your Honor.
When somebody applies for a pardon, I'm not sure why the application, that application or the president's decision to deny it is a law enforcement record. Can you say something more about that?
Your Honor, it is a law enforcement record under cases such as Binion in the Ninth Circuit and the Second Circuit's Associated Press versus DOJ case, and that is because the president's decision has law enforcement, has immediate law enforcement impact. It maintains the whole set of disabilities and penalties that are attendant upon conviction. So that clearly does make the president's decision a law enforcement record. And under the Supreme Court's decisions in John Doe and Abramson, it's clear that if that's recompiled in some fashion, even if it's recompiled on a list that doesn't in and of itself have a law enforcement purpose, that doesn't change the law enforcement character.
What if they were asking for a list of applicants, not of their applications, just the fact that they applied? Would that be a law enforcement record, the application itself, the fact that John Doe applied for a pardon? Does it become a law enforcement record at that point?
Well, arguably, Your Honor, yes. Of course, here we're talking about the president's act, the denial. But yes, because that triggers the process that would determine the law enforcement effect that would follow from it based on the president's action. So if there are no further questions, I would hope to be given a minute or two for rebuttal. Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the court. To begin with, before I forget, the site to the BOP website is in the would be the red brief if we didn't file on ECF. I believe it does include race. I did not.
It would be a red brief if we hadn't filed electronically. Is that what you said?
Right. I believe the BOP website includes race. I did not look at it again this week, but the site is in the brief. To start off where you finished up with 7C, the court's cases from Pratt to more recent cases such as Campbell and Jefferson reiterate that Exemption 7 requires a connection between an individual and incident and a possible security risk or violation of federal law. That's not what clemency is about. The information here doesn't exist as a result of any DOJ investigation into federal law. In fact, the DOJ's statements of standards for clemency state plainly that it does not review the underlying conviction. You can see that at JA 74. And if you have no further questions about 7C, I'm going to move back to the privacy.
Well, with respect to somebody who's out and is seeking a pardon, doesn't the investigation include whether they committed any other acts thereafter, arrests, things for which they weren't convicted? Doesn't it include that? In order to determine whether to give somebody a pardon, don't you look to make sure they've lived a pure life since being released?
Well,
not you, but the justice.
Presumably, OPA does look at to see if there's any later convictions.
Yeah.
But the purpose of the evaluation of the application is not to determine if there have been subsequent crimes. There's a list of the standards that OPA looks at. In the Joint Appendix at 75. So the government does look at post-conviction conduct, character, and reputation. I think post-conviction conduct
doesn't or does?
Does.
Yeah.
Would include subsequent crimes,
right.
But that's the FDA, the FBI investigation isn't looking it isn't investigating a specific crime. It's not looking to see.
Well, is it, it's not any less than the Middleman case of doing a background investigation, is it?
Well, There's a difference, I think, between coming across evidence of crime when doing a background check and investigating a violation of the law.
Right, but it would seem that before the president granted a pardon, the president would want to know, and therefore the pardon attorney would want to look to determine whether the person had committed 25 more murders since the time at which they were released for the first murder. And that would be a significant part of the investigation to make sure the person has been a law-abiding citizen. Am I wrong about that?
There's nothing in the record to speak to that specifically other than the standards for clemency that come from DOJ.
Well, it says that a pardon is granted on the basis the petitioner has demonstrated, I'm looking at the page you pointed me to, demonstrated good conduct for a substantial period of time after conviction and service of sentence.
Well, I'm agreeing with you that if the investigation showed that the applicant had committed another crime, that is unlikely they would get a pardon. But that doesn't mean the purpose of the government's background check is to investigate a violation of federal law. And that's, for 7C, the government has to be looking for a connection between the individual and a security risk or violation of the law.
What was Middleman about? Wasn't that an OPM background check?
I think that case was a background check. I don't recall, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But clemency is not about law enforcement. It's about mercy and forgiveness, to take a word from DOJ's pardon documents. And in addition to which, the investigation is triggered by the applicant coming to the government and asking the government to look at him or her, and that's hardly how law enforcement is initiated.
I mean, we're talking about whether it applies to the list of names that the White House sends to the pardon attorney. Is that document compiled for law enforcement purposes? And do you need to go as far to say that, you know, someone couldn't approach law enforcement and said, you know, investigate me?
No, I don't think you don't necessarily need to decide that the clemency process is not part of law enforcement, though I think you can. But the list that the government, that the White House sends back to DOJ, that is not a law enforcement act. That's for informational purposes so that DOJ can process the press releases for grants and send out notices to applicants. Likewise, the information exists in several places. There's the list the White House sends. There's a database at the point where OPA is entering the final disposition into the database. That's not a law enforcement act, but record keeping. And it also exists through the letters that are in each file that the pardon attorney sends to each applicant informing him or her of the president's decision. That's not an act of law enforcement either.
Can I ask, I think that you may have a lifeline on this from Judge Rogers on the fallback position, which is whether the list itself, but I've looked up Middleman now. Middleman is a case which is about a routine OPM background investigation, and it says that is law enforcement because the principal purpose of a background investigation is to ensure that a prospective employee has not broken the law or engaged in other conduct making her ineligible for the position. And reading what I read to you about what happens in a pardon investigation, certainly seems like an important part is to determine whether the person has broken the law since having been released. How would you distinguish those two? I mean, it's not the end of the world for you if it's a law enforcement record, but still, I'm not sure how you can distinguish a background investigation from a pardon investigation.
I think that looking at the definitions of law enforcement from the court's cases and comparing it to the standards for considering pardon petitions.
This is the court's case. This is our case, Middleman.
Right, but you're talking about an application in a particular case, and I'm relying on the standard from Campbell and Jefferson, which doesn't seem to fit at all well with the OPA's standards for consideration of clemency. On the privacy side of the balancing test, DOJ has offered a couple ideas why someone might prefer to keep private the fact that he's been denied clemency. But whether information isn't private if someone has no reasonable expectation that it will be kept secret, as DOJ's own FOIA manual explains, there's no invasion of privacy without an expectation of privacy. And DOJ makes clear to applicants that they cannot assume the fact of the application and denial will be kept secret. I think your prior discussion covered a lot of what I wanted to say. From the privacy statement for pardons to the privacy statement for clemency and the regulations, DOJ describes several ways in which the information may be disclosed. Counsel stated that applicants are assured that the only way disclosure will happen is in response to a specific request. That's actually not correct. The rules governing petitions for executive clemency, 28 CFR 1.5, state that although the department will not generally disclose information about clemency petitions, they may be made available for inspection in whole or in part when, in the judgment of the Attorney General, their disclosure is required by law or the ends of justice. And actually, both Judge Bates and Judge Culler-Catelli observed that this regulation could hardly be read as a promise of anonymity, in addition to which OPA informs people before they apply and when they apply that it will disclose publicly for sure in the case of a grant. And in some circumstances, unusual circumstances, but in some circumstances when clemency has been denied. On the public side of the balance, by releasing the names of people who've been granted clemency, the government concedes that there's a public interest in knowing to whom clemency is granted. It, in fact, issues press releases. It posts the names online. You can read them going back 200 years. The same interest applies to the names of people who were denied clemency. It's the interest in seeing what the government is up to. And what the government is up to is both granting and denying clemency. As Judge Bates said, this is a paradigmatic case for disclosure. Seeing the names requested here, it makes the list of granted individuals more valuable, as both district court judges in both of these Lardner cases have observed. The court has any further questions?
What is the method of finding the ethnicity once you get the, what do you have in mind as a method of finding the ethnicity of the people once you get a list? Isn't the issue is, among others, whether there's a discrimination with respect to ethnicity and other things, is that right?
Well, one of the, this may be inferred from the record, but it's not clearly in there, but one of the things that sparked Mr. Lardner's interest was this situation with Chibuzi Okori. You couldn't necessarily tell his race from his name, but you can tell his national origin from his name. So in terms of making, drawing conclusions, making assumptions from a list of 9,000 people, it won't be perfect, as is true any time you analyze information based on a single field of data. But that's done all the time. You draw some conclusions from seeing the number of people incarcerated by race. It doesn't tell you necessarily.
What was the example in which you could tell someone's national origin from their name?
Well, Chibuzi Okori both his first name and his last name are typical and common Nigerian names. And another category of people you'd be able to tell, related to the March Rich example that you mentioned, if there are famous people who were denied, that would also be interesting to know. Do we only see notorious crimes and famous people on the granted side of the list? Do any of them exist on the denied side of the list? Those names would stand out.
Further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Koppel, the Bureau of Prisons website, which I'm looking at, has an inmate locator function. And for every name on the indicator, on the list that comes up when one puts in a name, I put in John Lewis just to see what would happen. And I got 37 John Lewis's with varying middle names and initials. For every one, it gives the name, the register number, the age, race, sex, release date if released, and facility if not released.
That's correct, Your Honor. And certainly the rate. I apologize. I erred when I said that I didn't think that it included race, but it does. However, the OPA system does not track people at all by race. I would just point that out. It does. But it asks for country of birth. Excuse me.
Once one has a name, one can use the BOP inmate locator, right, to determine race.
To determine race
and age and so.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So a study that was looking at race or age would be facilitated by this.
A study.
It was looking at the president's practices with regard to race and age, comparing those that are released. They were granted some clemency or advantage versus those who are not.
Yes, Your Honor. Certainly, that type of study would be facilitated, but that doesn't alter the fact that it's totally speculative. The public interest is totally speculative to begin with, and that's not good enough under Favish and its progeny, because the mere fact that there was wrongdoing and discussed with respect to the one individual in the IG report simply does not mean that this information with respect to 9,200 or so individuals of differing national origins that one cannot even necessarily determine meaningfully with this information that is a satisfactory nexus for purposes of the of 6 and 7C. And the specific information just it may encourage a fishing expedition, but it doesn't reveal anything in and of itself with respect to this list of names.
I think it makes it hard to say that there's literally zero public interest in disclosure.
There may not be zero public interest, Your Honor, but it's still negligible, and it's still when one balances it against the harm to the privacy interest under 6 and 7C, the privacy interest should nonetheless carry the day.
Further questions? Mr. Koppel, did you have a single last point that you wanted to leave us with?
There was one point that I wanted to make, which is that it's clear that the general rule under the regulations and guidelines and what the applicants are told is non-disclosure, and the pardon attorney's letter makes it clear to the person that every effort will be made not even to reveal the reason why the FBI is interviewing the person. And my last point is subsequent criminal history.
Where's that?
That is in the letter from Richard Rogers, which is attached to Helen Bulwark's first declaration, which says that every effort.
That the FBI won't tell the interviewee the reason?
That the person is seeking a pardon. That the reason that they're asking is because the person is seeking a pardon.
Where's that? Could you tell me, is there a JA site for that?
There is a JA, page 94. Thanks very much. And subsequent criminal history, of course, is extremely important in the pardon context, as I think the court recognized from its questions.
So that says, it does say what you said, but it then says, we cannot assure your client or you that in no circumstances will the nature of the inquiry become known to some of the people interviewed. Right?
That's true, Your Honor. They make it clear that they can't assure that, but it's certainly also clear that they're attempting to not to disclose the information, the fact of the pardon, and to keep it confidential. So
they're sort of taking a risk.
That's correct, Your Honor. But again, given the understanding that the applicants have when they embark on the process, it's clear that they have been led to believe by OPA that they will make every effort not to reveal this information, and that they will not disclose it as a general rule, except to in the case where they get specific named inquiries regarding individuals.
We couldn't have a circumstance where the Justice Department's advice to people was sufficient to overcome the Freedom of Information Act in every situation to establish a privacy interest that would otherwise be overcome. That would eviscerate the act.
That's correct.
How is this different?
Although, of course, in the confidentiality under 7D, there could be that.
Yes. But we don't have a 7D here.
This is just 6, and this is just the privacy exemptions.
Yeah.
Yes. But no, that is certainly true that type of assurance in and of itself cannot carry necessarily carry the day under 6 and 7C. But again, given the whole background here and the way the system operates, it's certainly clear that the privacy interest is more than de minimis, and in contrast, the public interest is negligible and highly speculative, and that's not good enough under either 6 or certainly under the even more privacy-friendly 7C. So if there are no further questions, I would urge the court to reverse.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Thank you. Thank you both. The case is submitted.